This is the Jenny Radcliffe Talk Show for ITSP Magazine, with me, Jenny Radcliffe, the People Hacker. Conversations at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.
Thank you for joining us for this conversation here on ITSP Magazine. If you like what you hear, please consider supporting our efforts with a podcast sponsorship, which will help us to further raise cybersecurity awareness in our everyday lives. Thank you for your support.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Human Factor Security Podcast, where I am joined today by a social engineering legend. Welcome to the show, Stephanie Carruthers, or should I say, Snow.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be talking to you.
Well, we're excited that you're on, and it's taken us quite a while to coordinate our diaries.
It has, yes.
It takes a long, long time.
We are busy women, yes.
Well, you know, those buildings won't break into themselves, will they?
No, that's true. It's like every time we message each other, it's like, what are you breaking into this week?
Do you know, when we were trying to arrange that call, and I pinged because of, you know, maybe a dozen people on the planet that would understand this. And I was like, it's really wet. I'm on a fire escape. And the only thing I can do is just rearrange diary appointments until someone lets me in. Oh, there we are. I knew you'd know the feeling. So
yes, absolutely.
So listen, for those of you who don't know, Snow is your Twitter handle, but yes. Perhaps you could explain what it is that you do at the moment.
Yep. So, my handle is Snow. A little bit of background about myself. I am a social engineer as well. I focus on really all things social engineering. So lots of open source intelligence gathering, or OSINT, phishing, so sending out malicious emails, vishing with a V, so voice phishing, the phone calls, and physical security, which is by far my favorite. I work at X-Force Red, so with a great team of super talented hackers, and lucky to lead kind of a social engineering practice over there. So that's kind of what I do right now. My background is actually in two kind of weird things. So cells and special effects makeup artistry. So I've gotten to use both of those two things. Kind of my experience with cells and really manipulating people has carried over into this career. And special effects makeup too. My love for kind of costume and disguises I've gotten to use on engagements as well.
Yeah, makes sense. I'm so envious of the fact that some of your, I saw you, I think it was on an interview, and you were dressed as a relative. You had like a little wig on. And
oh, right.
I was so convinced. I was like, God, none of the wigs. I tend not to do this, but I do have wigs just in case. None of them look right. That convincing. What a brilliant advantage.
Yeah, so the wigs are fun, but With disguises, honestly, when you start making yourself look different, it really comes down to like prosthetics. And to be honest, that's not something that's really easy to do on engagements. I mean, that takes hours. So like wigs and uniforms are a really quick way to slightly change how you look. But unfortunately, the fun things like prosthetics and really like full costumes are very time consuming.
It's not just that though. I also think that, and I say this a lot when I train people or talk to people, is that the more elaborate the pretext, the harder it is to maintain, right?
That is so true. Yes. Yeah. So I like to do social engineering training, right? And it's fun to see students, but when they come up with these very elaborate things, it gets burned really fast. Or even like on vishing calls, they'll have this pretext that's insane. And they get on the call and it just unravels super fast because it's like all these different components. And they're like, I don't know how to answer this. It's too crazy. But really, the more simple pretext, the easier it's going to be for yourself, and it's more believable. And that's a really good point.
Well, I always say that. And I always think, you know, particularly if I'm I mean, I'm just basically, this isn't going to be like a normal, because this is, I just really want to gossip with you about the job to a certain extent, right? But one of the things I always say is, say I have a pretext. So a pretext I use a lot is I'm going to measure an office for like carpets or blinds or something like that.
Okay.
And I'm inhabiting that person, but I pick someone who does that job that I know, right? So maybe, or not even that does that job, but if I, so I've got a friend who does events. And I will be that friend. So I'll take on her hobbies and her life a little bit. And, you know, and so like when I'm asked questions, I can remember it, because I think people really underestimate how easy it is to get flustered. But I'm talking more about, I focus mostly on physical infiltration, but how easy it is to get flustered when you're trying to remember a story, when you're trying not to be burnt, when you're trying to collect information. It's, for me, it's the same thing. So I try and kind of use someone I know in some ways, instead of completely entirely fabricated pretext. And it's for the same reason, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The easier that you're able to speak to something or just know, I don't know, it just makes it so much easier. One that I like to use a lot is a HIPAA auditor if I'm going into hospitals. And so it's something that, before I did my very first hospital physical security assessment, I actually met with my friend, like you said, who works in a hospital system. And they went and they took me around the whole hospital. So I got to understand like how it works behind the scenes and underground and like where the offices are and kind of what it looks like. So I got to see that from like their perspective. And that really helped from like the auditor perspective. So I knew what I was able to speak to, and really having something very simple goes a long way, because then you're not fumbling over yourself or trying to think of questions on the spot, or, you know, answers to things that people might ask. But yeah, I think definitely the more simple, the better. And I think people who are more new to this definitely go, you know, they want to go over the top, or they think they have to go over the top. But where I've been more successful has really been the more simple pretext, for sure.
Because tactically, right? I mean, you've got to think of things anyway. So all the plans, everything that you do on the ground is going to be thrown into complete disarray by, this is just my experience, but I wonder if it's yours, you know, by just something random, you know? And so you've got to do all that anyway. So the last thing you want to be doing is remembering some complicated pretext. But one of the things, you know, you're saying about hospitals, and I just want to touch about this a bit, because hospitals are a nightmare, I think, to do a physical infill. First of all, they're very complicated. This is my view. I've a very complicated layout, difficult to memorize the layout, lots of restricted access, and just full. It's full of the public, right? Well, at least I've done a couple of private medical facilities, but public hospitals, full of the public, which you'd think would be a good thing, but then isn't. I mean, what's your experience of those larger sort of public access targets?
Yeah. So I have mixed feeling on hospitals. So I think that I've had higher success with hospitals because they have public and they expect a lot of people to be coming in and out. So I think because of that, they're used to seeing a lot of people just walking around places.
Sure.
But they are like mazes. I have gotten lost in places.
So
and
true.
It's terrifying, especially with like operating rooms. That's obviously a place I should not be in.
Absolutely.
I'm not going to risk myself or someone else's life, right? Like, I'm not putting my germs in an operating room. But it's very easy to turn a corner and go through a door and end up somewhere you shouldn't be in a hospital. So it is terrifying. So for that aspect, yeah, medical facilities, and it's more scary because you can definitely end up somewhere you shouldn't be. So it kind of depends. So hospitals, for the most part, I've kind of had a little bit of a higher success rate, I think, because they are used to seeing public in a lot of different areas, but they kind of scare me from that aspect of just, I guess, I don't know, the germs and cleanliness part of it.
Absolutely. And also, though, we're led to believe from popular culture that like that is the one scene in movies and TV that is the easiest thing to socially engineer, right? You see someone walking down a corridor, they put on a doctor's coat or whatever, and whoa, you're in. And I've I just never, ever been my experience at hospital. Ever, ever. It's always been like, that wouldn't fit me. So I'd be wearing like a really oversized, like say like a brain surgeon's uniform or something, and then not have a clue about anything. And you know, and I tend to find anywhere that's got a lot of in-house terminology. So you know, if you're trying to be any kind of staff higher than maybe maintenance, you should have some basic knowledge, I don't know, of medicine. That to me, that preys on my mind as well. And I think I can't, if someone asked me where's epidemiology or something, if that, I'd be like, okay, I don't know. What are you talking about? So I find that, yeah, I find it quite daunting. And also if I have to hide anywhere, for the same reason that you were saying, I just think to myself, I could be risking, I don't want to risk anything. I don't want to cause a problem in this facility, which I probably wouldn't have the same thoughts on an office, maybe.
Right. And then for offices, I really like to, especially larger offices, impersonate employees, especially a new employee, because then I can act lost. It's very easy to act lost because I feel like I'm always lost in general.
Yeah, there's no acting required, easy. Right?
Right. Yeah, it's just me. Everyday life, I just don't know where I'm going. But it's easy. And everyone's been a new employee at some point of their life, so they can relate to you. And a lot of times they feel bad. So if they do stop you for whatever reason, and you're like, oh, I'm new, I'm just trying to find, you know, the break room or the mail room, they can point you in the right direction and they probably won't feel as bad. But that is a pretext I like to use a lot, is if I can blend in with their environment. So again, heavy OSINT, if I can create my own badge that looks like theirs, so at least I look like I belong somewhat, to impersonate employees is probably what I do the most, especially in office settings.
I don't know. I do less offices these days. And I find that I was starting to run into, I mean, I'm old and jaded, right? But I was starting to run into the same sort of 7 people when I was on any assignment. And I have a whole talk on this, but I just talk to you and see if you recognize some of these people. How about Mr. or Miss, I really want to help you. Like Mr. Extra Helpful.
Oh, yes. Yes.
So you need perhaps some help. So do you know what I mean? Do you run into those? Because you've got Mr. Helpful. You've got I'm on to you. Mm-hmm. So you ever get someone who you just know that they've made you, but they're not doing anything about it?
Yeah, no. So one of my favorite stories about this one. So I was tailgating a woman and she was on to me, and I knew she was on to me because she kept looking at me.
Yeah.
And I was in the office and I was dropping USBs around the office, and she saw me. So I was like, oh, you know, she caught me, but she didn't say anything. So I was surprised. So I kept going, right? I'm not going to stop. But I knew she saw me. So I was just waiting for some type of confrontation, but until she said something, you know, I'm going to keep going.
Right.
And so she didn't say anything and I was really surprised. But then later in the day, I came back and I was talking to the receptionist. It was kind of like the last thing I had to do is I was going to see if the receptionist would plug in the USB and open up my file.
Right.
And so I'm sitting there talking to the receptionist, and right behind me is a security guard and the woman who was suspicious. And she's giving the security guard my full description right behind my back.
Oh.
And she's like, and there's this white, short, chubby girl. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm right here.
Oh my God, bitch.
I'm right here. And like, it was so surreal. Like, I felt like it was like this out of body, like experience. I'm just like, they're going to turn around and see me. But the whole time I'm like, all right, like they, you know, they haven't spotted me. I don't know how. And so I just carry on my conversation and just walk out when I'm done. But it was just so crazy to me. Like, she could have easily just said, excuse me, can I help you? I need to escort you to security. She could have just said something or taken me somewhere to stop me. I knew she was suspicious, but she waited until how many hours later?
But, you know, I think this is so much part of everything. It's part of, it needs to be stressed in awareness training, but it's also psychology, right? It's the idea of a lot of clients, it's a game. Right. And that's probably not a very, that's not a view that's going to get me lots of work. But, you know, this is exciting.
Yeah.
And I think they want to sort of prove that they were onto you sometimes, and that like to talk about, because it's a clever thing to, you know, if they're the only person in the company that's made a social engineer or you know, a red team, as it were, going in, I think it's a game. And they just want to see what you're going to do, you know, so they can, because I've had this myself, not in exactly that way, describing me behind my back, but definitely people following me and knowing that I shouldn't be there and just pulling back from engaging.
Funny, because you could see like the looks on their face, like they know they should be stopping you or saying something, but yeah, it's funny that they don't, or maybe they don't know how to. That's kind of what I think is, they know they should be doing something, but they don't know exactly what they should say or who they should report it to maybe right away. And I think that's a lot of the problem too, is they know this isn't good, they know this looks bad, but they don't know the exact way to approach it. And just like you said, I think security awareness training doesn't spell out exactly what they should do or really give them a chance to do it often, so they don't know how to do it.
One of the things that I always say is that when we're doing particularly vishing or certainly face-to-face engagements, you're looking to sow seeds of doubt in someone's psychology, in someone's mind. And in that moment of doubt, we're going to insert, and I say we because I'm just talking, you know, social engineers, are going to insert an instruction, right, which is what we want that person to do. And what training has to do is make sure that that's overridden. So basically that the person says, right, my brain's doubting something, I know what I do now. And like almost that they're deaf to the next piece of direction. I don't think that that's as clear as it should be to people. So they hover in that doubt, waiting to make up their mind. And at that point, of course, it gives you that extra 10 minutes for the USB. You know, now the receptionist is plugging the thing in. Yeah. It's that hesitation that is so, so dangerous. Hard to override though, from a protection perspective.
No, I completely agree. That's a really good point. And I think too, if organizations would have these tests more often to give their employees a chance to spot social engineering, to actually, you know, go in and confront someone more often, I think it would be a lot better. So, you know, coupled with security awareness training telling you what to do, with more opportunities to stop someone, I think, you know, improvements would be insane. I think that would be great.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think you're completely right. And I think what the advantage of that approach is, giving them lots of different types of people to stop. Because one of the things I'm still convinced stops people from questioning me is the fact that I just don't look like a hacker or a criminal. I just don't. Yes. And neither do you. And it's not just right. Because we're women. I think that's something to do with it, right? But I'm not really behaving suspiciously, except I am.
I completely agree.
But we were saying before we started recording that a lot of social engineers, or it seems like there's an awful lot of female social engineers these days.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's something that I've definitely noticed a lot more. Women are social engineers. I don't know if that's because it's more, I don't know. I think more, if you look around our industry, a lot more women are more social. I don't know if that's just more easy to gravitate to.
Do you get asked the question, is it easier because you're a woman?
All the time.
Yeah, me too. What do you say?
I just say it's easy because I'm outgoing. I don't think my gender has anything to do with the fact. I think I'm good at it because I'm outgoing and because I'm very aware of other people. I'm very empathetic. But I don't know. I mean, I think it also depends on the pretext I play. I think if I were pretending to be a very technical person, I wouldn't be as successful as a man.
Good point.
Right? I think that plays a lot into it as well.
It was expectations all the time. That's the thing. I always was grateful that people underestimated me, you know, because that helped in my job.
Right.
And I think it's those expectations that we sort of twist, especially on the physical one.
Right.
But the other thing I always wonder, I answer when I'm asked that question, is, but I think you're assuming that the security guard or security staff are male.
True.
Because a female security guard will completely not hesitate in stopping me. You know, they seem to, you know, they wouldn't be as trusting of another woman, maybe.
Yeah, the last physical I did, it was, I would say probably 75% of the security guards were female, and they stalked me a lot.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, actually a lot. And that's interesting. When I do a lot of vishing, I've noticed that I'm stopped a lot more by females compared to males.
Yeah.
And I always find that that's just something very interesting to me.
I think that's a good argument for diversity in security.
Yeah.
You know, is that for sure, if it's a female security guard or if it's females in within companies. I mean, I've never done any, you know, proper kind of counts on this or research on it. But I, you know, just anecdotally, I'd say I was stopped more by women than men.
Yeah, I would say the same thing. And that's something I think would be very interesting to keep some statistics on going forward.
We should count. We should definitely count and swap notes, mate.
Yep, for sure.
So one of the reasons that I wanted to talk to you is because there's some of the stuff that you say really resonates with me. And I think it makes you really a good social engineer. And you do stress about doing your homework and about that OSINT piece. I just wanted to talk to you a little bit about that because I'm the same, right? I find that really is very important. And you really stress that quite heavily on the research side, on the surveillance side. So talk to me a little bit about, is that your favorite part? It sounds like one of the parts you really enjoy.
I do really enjoy it, but I also feel like if I didn't do it, I'm setting myself up for failure. I think it's so important. And if I didn't do it, you know, who knows what could happen. So especially with the physical aspect, I could never imagine going into a company and trying to break in and never even seeing, you know, pictures of what the building looks like or what employees look like or trying to find a floor plan. Like, there's so many aspects that you can find out before you even go on site that could help you tremendously. Even knowing what type of tools to bring. There's just so many things. So I really like to start with just Google Maps, just getting familiar with the building. So some of the things with Google Maps is finding every entrance. So I like to see employee entrances and then public entrances.
Yeah.
So with the employee entrances is I like to see where those are, because when I go and do recon, so before even just active testing, I'll go and park during like busy times where employees are getting to work, leaving work, lunchtime, to see which exact doors they're using. So those are the doors I know when and where I'm going to tailgate.
Absolutely. And not always the official entrances and exits either. I like the secret ones.
Yes. Yeah, there was one of my last ones. There was a sky bridge. They were doing construction and it was actually boarded up. Like, no one should have been using it, but employees were still like literally picking up the door that was supposed to be boarded and moving it and then moving it back out of the way. But it was the way I got into the building. So like, if I didn't know that was there and did recon, like, I wouldn't have, you know, gotten the building.
But this is why I think you're good at your job, you know, and I kind of do watch different people talking about this, but this is one of the things that I always say. People think that you can wing it, that you can tailgate in and that you can wander around. And it's true to a certain extent, I think.
Sure.
But I would rather over prepare. And I know that makes me sound really kind of, I don't know what it makes me sound, but I'm not risk. I mean, I can't possibly be risk averse, but I'd rather over-prepare and know everything about it before I try. And I just got the feeling that you did that. You know, I suppose the question I'm kind of building up to is, I feel like there's a laziness sometimes about some of the assignments people do. And I feel like the people who really are committed to the job and do it professionally do all this research so that you've more chance of it being successful. I feel that you'd agree with that. I feel that you would. Yeah. I mean, am I right?
No, absolutely. And I think it's really easy to think, oh, I can just tailgate in, or I can just, you know, bat my eyes and the security guard will let me in. And that's absolutely not the case at all. you know, I want to know every possible way I can get into this building. And I don't want to say, okay, I got in this way. I want to try every possible way, because that's not fair to my client to just be like, okay, you know, you paid for me to come out for 5 days for testing and I just tailgated in. No, I want to say I tailgated in 5 times on this door, 6 times on this door. I was stopped 8 times on this door. You know, like, I want to show them all of these ways and how I did it, how I was stopped, right? It's just really giving them the most value. And I think that's where my drive comes from, is really for my client. Because, I mean, they're spending a lot of money and I want to make sure they get the value. And I think a lot of people see this, you know, I don't know. It's not fair to say a lot of people who do this. I think I have seen some people who do this that say, oh, I'm doing a physical and I got in. Yay. Look at me. Right. That's
exactly
for you. But I mean, what are you giving your client at the end of the day? And right.
I mean, I was going to ask you about this as well, because I completely agree. And I think that I wouldn't necessarily do the same thing. I wouldn't do it over and over again. It depends. Certainly lately I have a target and you know, we try and be in and out in about 90 minutes for most of the job. So I think it's slightly different with some of the assignments I'm getting, but I agree with you. And I think value is the key. And I wanted to ask you about this, and about, I see a corruption, I suppose it is, in the way that people talk about it. And one of the things that I don't imagine that you do, but that I've read that a lot of people do, is kind of showing off once you get in. So like sitting down, and wait, you know, sitting at a meeting with the target in the meeting, or you know, or those types of things. And I always warn people not to do it. I mean, what do you think about that? I always say, don't do it. You're professional. That's unprofessional.
Yeah, those kinds of things make me cringe. So I guess it depends on a couple of things. It depends on what's in scope, right? So maybe, just maybe, your only goal for this assessment is to get into the building by any means possible and surprise your client. If that's the case, okay, cool. Right. That makes sense. How I do physical security assessments is typically I work with my client. I have a checklist of goals, and I try to do as many goals, as many times, as many ways as I can. And I increase my noise to try to see, you know, okay, I get all my goals, and then when can I get stopped? Mm-hmm. At no means am I, like, you know, trying to, I guess, showboat? I don't know. Like,
I call it I'd say it's showboating, but I've seen it.
Yeah, I don't know.
And I've had to go in and retest a client because someone's gone in and done that. And I just find it extraordinary.
Yeah, I guess it feels more immature.
Yes. But then the job attracts that to a certain extent because it is fun.
Right. No, it's definitely a sexy job, right? And it's like very, I don't know, it's definitely sexy, and it has that appeal to it. But I think that immaturity comes from newness. That's a horrible word for this. From people who are maybe more new to it. And I think when you start to have more experience, you kind of start to realize, especially from a client point of view, like they should be getting value out of this, you know. And every time I do an assessment, I always sit and think, what could I improve next time I do this? And I'm always trying to make them better every time I do this. And, you know, to sit there and kind of, you know, I don't know, just like goof off or use that show, but it's just, I don't know, it just feels like a waste of time when I could be trying a new technique or a new pretext or really spending that time developing my skill set rather than wasting it.
And also making someone look stupid, right? It does. It makes people look stupid. And I never think that's productive.
No, like if I was a client and I saw that, I would be furious. Absolutely. I would be so mad.
So I wanted to ask you a couple of, like, these are just questions. There are only a few people in the world I'd ask these questions. So you've got to kind of excuse me for asking you, like, randomly instead of, because normally I go, so what was your background? And, you know, were you technical? And that's a good conversation. But with you, I don't even want to, partly because you did a great interview with Marco and Sean.
I love them.
On ITSP, right? And so we will put a link to that so that you can hear the way Stephanie aced the Capture the Flag at DEF CON. And that's great. I want to ask you these questions because I am personally interested. So first thing, what's the weirdest thing that's happened to you on a physical? Can you remember? Or one, because I always wonder, and I always try and find people who actually do the job who say, oh, there was this, because I find it a bizarre job.
Oh, the weirdest. Oh, man, I'm going to have to think about weird. I don't know. I feel like I've been pretty lucky and I haven't gotten too weird. I think that the having the girl call me, you know, short, white and chubby behind my back was kind of weird.
That is weird.
I've spilt my coffee on me before. That was more of like, so I'm very, like, I'm an antsy person. Like, I get startled very easily, which probably should be like a warning that I shouldn't do this. I don't know. but something I like to do on physicals, and this isn't a weird story, but I'm just going to tell it anyways. I'm sorry.
No. Go.
So something I like to do is when I do get into an office, I like to try to find a break room and make myself a cup of coffee, because I feel like if you see someone making coffee or walking around with coffee, they look like they belong and they don't look suspicious.
Right.
Right. So I'm making myself a cup of coffee and I pour myself a cup of coffee and I mix it and I'm holding it in my hand. And this lady comes up behind me, and this is at like a weird time too. It's very early in the morning and not a lot of people are in there. And she says just something like, oh, hey, how's it going? Or good morning or something. And I wasn't expecting her. I screamed and I jumped.
Oh,
and
no.
The coffee went everywhere and it was so hot. And I just felt like so embarrassed. I'm just like, I am so sorry. You scared the shit out of me. And she felt bad. But I'm just like, oh my God, now I smell like coffee and I have coffee all over my shirt. But that was just like horrifying.
But you know, I bet it played in your favor, because what kind of criminal?
Right. Oh, like not a smart one for sure, let me tell you.
But in her head, like, there's no way that you can be suspicious.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Now.
Right. Know? Like, what kind of criminal will like scream when you see what you do?
And I bet you went with it like the professional you are. Because I know
right.
you
no, I had to. Yeah. But it was just like, it was pretty embarrassing. But I mean, like, she didn't question me. Like, why would she? So.
But that's often on the list, right? I find increasingly now in assignments, that's on the list. Make yourself a hot beverage. They never say to your coffee, I don't know why. Make yourself a hot beverage. Yep. In a communal area.
Right.
Because I think, because it does, I mean, the amount of access that's given is huge. And I remember being in one place and I had some bicarbonate of soda. I don't know whether you call it baking soda or something different in the US. But I just put it into the sugar. And I only did it just to say, well, because I had access to the sugar. And then when I came out and wrote the report, I thought, what were you doing? It was like a talk about showboating. That was pranking the client. But in my head, it was completely logical, because we could measure, like, that could have been poison or something. I wasn't, just to say, embarrassingly, that was not that long ago. I think at that point I had some fatigue for the job, you know. So no, so there's those lists of requirements. I mean, do you ever stay in overnight? Do you ever get locked in anywhere?
I've been lucky. I haven't had any of those issues yet. Thank goodness.
Give it time.
Oh man, have you?
Yeah, always.
Really?
Especially because especially in the early days, locked in cupboards. I was in, because I'm like clumsy, and I often worked alone, you know, in the past. I had a crew at times, but a lot of the time I was on my own. And I was in Europe, and I was in a place, and it was really straightforward, actually. It was just going really early in the morning. Building was wide open, about as secure as the kids' camping tent, you know. And that was fine. And I get into the room, and I had to get to the safe, but not open the safe, but show that I got there, right? So I wasn't going, they didn't pay me or didn't want me to try and crack it open or anything, but just could I get in?
Okay.
And then I had to leave something on the desk and take some photographs. All went really straightforwardly. And then I just walked to the door, and it you know, like a hotel room, but the other way around. It just locked.
Oh, no.
And like, Nobody, I wasn't calling in or checking in. I was on my own. I was in Europe, and I was about three floors up. It was just like, shit. And it was like a really heavy fire door. I just thought, there's just no way I can get out. So I climbed out the window and I walked around to the next office and let myself in the next office window, which, thank God, was open. I don't know what, like, it was almost like, there is no plan at this point. But I can't be, but for professional embarrassment, I couldn't be caught. I just felt like I couldn't be caught in it. Yeah. Oh, God.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So you've been, so I wonder if it's luck or judgment, to be honest, because you sound like you're doing this very professionally and I sound like I'm a complete nightmare, you know, accident doing it. But are the assignments getting bigger? You know, you, because obviously you're working, big client yourself, big company yourself. Are those assignments getting bigger? Are you putting more people on them? How's it changing over the years for you?
Yeah, definitely when I started off, I would say that they were a lot smaller. And as I've grown professionally, yeah, they've gotten bigger. And now with my team that I'm on right now, X-Force Red, looking definitely at bigger organizations and bigger teams. So like Red Team engagements, it's not just me, right? You know, we're working with large teams and bigger objectives. So it's definitely changed, but I still am able to go and do, you know, my one-off physical assessments, which I absolutely love. Those are my favorite, I think.
I was going to ask, do you prefer to work alone or?
So I like working with a team. I think, especially if for some reason I were to get burned right away, it's definitely nice to have a backup. But for the most part, when I do just physical assessments, it's normally just me.
Yeah.
But I don't know, they're my favorite, especially compared to like fishing or vishing or other types of assessments. Physicals are, they have a special place in my heart. They're for sure my favorite.
Is that mostly what you're asked to do? I mean, what kind of percentage, well, not percentage, but like, do you have an awful lot of fishing assignments and sort of, how's it work?
Man, it's pretty even right now. It does fluctuate. Like I will feel like there'll be times where I'm doing nothing but fishing. It really just, it depends. It's, but right now it's pretty evenly spread, for the next, probably for the next few months too. So it's pretty nice.
Because I feel like it's a real specialism to speak to someone who does the physical side. I find less and less. People will say they're social engineers, but really they're experts in, say, vishing, which is fine. You know, I'm not saying that's a lesser thing, but I love it when you speak to someone who does the physical ones and does it on their own, as well as with the team like yourself, because I just feel like it's a rare breed.
Right. Yeah.
And I think that it's more and more, the corporate clients that we have are more and more asking for this as well. I think it's just, I don't know whether that's a compliance thing or.
Absolutely. But I think definitely having experience, you know, kind of across the board has definitely helped me. I like being able to send emails or make calls before I go on site as well. That's something that has definitely played a part into what I do for physicals. And I think that's been really helpful on definitely some engagements where I feel like tougher clients where I won't be able to get in. Sometimes just a phone call, pretending to be someone else inside the organization has let me get in when different tactics and, you know, physical bypassing won't work.
Sure. I mean, a bit of history is always helpful, I guess.
Yes.
I mean, I know I said I didn't want to go over the same things that Markham and Sean spoke about, right? But I do want to just briefly touch on what you did before and then how you sort of came into the field, just briefly. But like, you said at the start you did sales and you did special effects makeup.
Right.
Which are both very cool, by the way. Did you get any training in sales that is similar to the training that you would give or you think people would need in social engineering? I mean, I know there are similarities, but is there anything that really stood out in your mind and you said, you know, they didn't know it, but they were teaching people to be social engineers?
Yeah, definitely. So with sales, so I did cosmetic sales. And one of the things I remember that they trained us on is they would call them one-liners. And so it's pretty much like if you're first talking to someone, you had to have these one-liners memorized. And of course, I don't have them memorized anymore. But it was pretty much your opener. And what I would call that now in social engineering is it's your rapport building. Mm. It's that first opening connection that you have with someone. And really, without that first rapport, like, you're not going to have a connection with someone. And without a connection with someone, it's very likely that they're not going to listen to you or really kind of further a conversation with you. So when you're first talking to someone and having that that connection right off the bat goes such a long way. And I don't think a lot of people realize that. So some of the techniques that I like to use, and a lot of it's based off the book, It's Not All About Me by Robin Dreeke.
Oh,
and
I could, great book.
Have you read it? Oh, it's my favorite, and I go over it all the time.
Do you know the elicitation?
Mm-hmm.
That whole coffee shop thing, and I'm looking for a gift, and
yes,
yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. Very good stuff. Of course, yep. Like naturally, yep. From his background, but yeah, yeah, very yeah. Good. Yeah, go on anyway. So you're saying,
so if you're interested in social engineering, or even sales, or really just talking to people in general and making connections, that book is a must read, and it goes over 10 different rapport building techniques. And it's really just simple things you can use as you're talking to someone for the first time to build rapport. And it's simple things. Like one of the ones I use all the time is artificial time constraints. So what it is it's letting the other person know that you're not going to be in the conversation for a long time. And how you can use this to say, hey, I'm on my way out the door. I just need 30 seconds. It's letting them know that they're not going to be stuck talking to you for 2 hours. So like in sales, it's, I know you're on your way out, or I have to go to a meeting soon. It's just bringing that wall down so they know that they're not stuck. And so little things like that can go a long way with social engineering. And it's, I can't stress how important rapport building is.
I completely agree. And I think it's something that from a point of view, from a criminal perspective, you want as little contact as possible.
Sure. Yeah.
But we're not, but you know, at the end, from a, you know, I hate the term white hat. I do. But because I just don't believe there's black or white at all, right? I said it on the tweet, actually, because when you said the other day on your tweets, I'm going to start calling myself a con artist because it's just it's just quicker, right? There's only 50 shades of grey, in my opinion. But now, you know, but if you're not, some of the stuff that we do and some of the rapport building and those conversations that we would do, I wouldn't do if I was a real criminal or if I was a bad guy, because there's far too much contact, right? And they'd remember things.
Yeah.
But I think you're absolutely right from you know, from a defense perspective, where we're doing these simulated attacks, that those are the things that really get people to kind of reveal that information. Yeah. And I say to, you know, who knows, maybe a criminal would do that. I wouldn't, because I'm not a criminal. I just like to stress that again. Yeah. but you know, I wouldn't necessarily do that, but like maybe they would. But I think that's what you're saying is really true. I tell you, one of the ones that I find, giving away the secret sauce now for anyone who's, you know, not on our training, yours or mine, but one of the things that I find is warning someone about something like a slippy floor or a loose tile. So saying, just be careful. Just watch. That's a bit loose there. Just watch yourself. Because why would anyone who was up to no good take the trouble to warn you about something? And honestly, that's another one that I really like. And I think, I think you're right. And I think Robin's book's amazing. And I think that's such a, and it's true, whether it's an email or a phone or certainly face to face. But it's these things about you that I like, because I can see that you take the time to do it, and I can see that you've thought about it, you know?
Yeah, well, I've also failed a lot at the beginning of my career.
Well, we all do that.
So I feel like I've learned a lot. But no, I definitely have the mindset of I really want to improve myself, right? Like I see where I can get better, and I don't want to stop, right? I don't want to just, I don't know, be comfortable where I am. I want to push myself, and I always want to learn new things. So I think that's a really good mindset, especially for someone with social engineering. Well, really just in our industry and hacking in general, to really just push themselves to continue to want to grow and learn more.
And I think that's a brilliant, it's almost a brilliant way to finish, but I just let me ask you just two or three more things whilst I've got you. Mm-hmm. One of the things is, do you have a signature? Like, do you ever, because I leave something behind on all my assignments, which probably is showboating, but it's not, people don't find them, right? But do you have anything, do you do that?
No. And man, I kind of wish I did now. I do
you
not.
And that's,
I kind of wish I did.
So one of my, someone who taught me, they get a piece of red ribbon and they tie a knot. And they leave that on the desk.
I like that. That's fun.
Classy, right?
That is. I like
classy.
It.
Mine's less yep. classy, but
can you say what yours is, or you don't want to say?
Yeah. I mean, it's fine. Okay. I leave a little octopus, a little silver charm, and I hide it though. They probably won't find it for years. Hopefully.
Oh, I love it.
But I just love the thought of like 6 months from now, some like HR lady sort of cleaning out a desk.
Yeah.
And go, what the hell? And you know, it's just for my private entertainment. They'll never make a connection. It's not like my logo's, you know, an octopus or something. It's just, it just amuses me.
That's awesome.
So you don't leave
it? No, I don't. But it's a fun idea. Like, so my mom once asked me if I take anything from clients. I'm like, I'm not like a serial killer. Like, that's not what I do. So no, I don't take or leave, but I really like that idea. It is pretty fun.
Okay.
But no, I don't.
Daft question then, silly question. Yeah. Did you ever eat anything that you should not?
I don't eat. I definitely
You're
drink.
So professional. This makes me laugh because I'm obviously, if you're there a long time, you know, a girl gets hungry. I just wondered, I ate a piece of cake once, right? Someone's birthday cake.
You camp out though. Let's be real. Like, you are there, like, you bring your bags and you know you're going to be there for a while because you're getting locked in. I haven't done that. So I think if I've gotten locked in, like, I would be like prepared. I would have like some protein bars in my pocket.
Shut up. Right. Okay. So first thing I would say is I expected you to say that because you're so goddamn polished and professional. Right. And also when you said you were in cosmetic sales, I was like, mentally, that's why those eyelashes are on flick. Okay, fine. But I did. So at one point I took a cereal bar. So it wasn't quite a protein bar, but I took these like little crunchy cereal bars.
Okay.
And I was obsessed with the idea that people would do me crunching. You know, like when you watch a movie and I thought, God, I can't. And then you're thirsty.
Oh, of course.
And we always say, whenever I'm putting a crew together or whenever we're scoping a job, I always say, you're going to get thirsty, but I don't want you to drink too much. And you always get the whole, but hydration's so important. Yeah, right. Yes, but tease me wheeze.
I like those.
And generally, if you're in a bathroom on a job, it's not because you need to use the bathroom, right?
That's true.
So you're so good.
Oh man, I spend most of my time in the bathroom, I swear.
So
because I need to.
Here's a scenario. Locked in a toilet on an assignment, reading over and over again whatever poster is on the back of the cubicle telling you about a charity they support.
Yes.
Somebody's leaving due. Someone's leaving party. Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
Yep.
I have
nightmares of posters.
Honestly.
Stall posters.
Just like 20 minutes in a stall. Or the one that says, I bet you've seen these in the States as well, that says, we are helping our environmental footprint.
Yes. Yes.
But if you read that like 50 times, you almost go into a state of relaxation. It's just like,
You know what? I know what I'm getting you for Christmas now. Hang it over your bed and it will relax you.
So I'm telling you, if that turns up at my door, I will come and find you. But you know, honestly, good. I could talk to you for hours. I knew that I had to get you and talk about this stuff because there are so few people in the world who, there are a lot of people who claim that they do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think there's far fewer who actually would know what I was talking about. Oh, last thing. Isn't it a kicker when you do all the prep and OSINT that you've spoken about? You've done the surveillance, you've looked at it at night, you've looked at it during the day, you've looked at it at the weekend, you know everything about it. Have you ever had that and you think, I'm prepared for anything, and then walk in and it's easy and you didn't need to use any of it?
Oh, yeah, I've had that once and it was so frustrating. Yes. Yeah. It's like, really? Oh. It's more rare. It's definitely more rare, but yeah, that's happened.
It's like, I wanted to use all my OSINT.
Yeah, or I've had one where I went through, and it was definitely more on the elaborate side, but I found this contract for a vendor that they had, and I found their uniforms, and I went through and I spent all this money on this uniform and the badge, and like, I just tailgated And the only goal was to get in because it was a brand new building and they were really concerned about it. But it was super simple. But all I did was just follow someone in, and I spent all this money on this elaborate uniform and just like, oh.
And then it's quite hard to use that again. Mm-hmm. But I went through a phase of just buying uniforms on eBay just because I thought it'd be useful to have uniforms from all kinds of places. And I remember having a closet clear out. In the fashion of Marie Kondo or something, because it was just all my work stuff was bursting out. And I took a photograph and I contemplated putting it on social media, but then thought, Jenny, you tell people not to overshare, right? But honestly, I had a McDonald's shirt and like a KFC shirt and like a Starbucks. And I just remember looking at it and thinking, but you idiot, like unless you, it was just like it was one of those late night, few glasses of wine, thinking that might that might come in useful for work.
Well, your next podcast, we definitely should have some glasses of wine and see like what kind of ridiculous outfits and uniforms.
I'll set you a challenge. Right? No, I'm not going to say this. No, I was going to say I'll set you a challenge. We have a dollar limit, right?
Yep.
And I'm gonna say, what did you buy? Oh, what did I buy? Let's see if you can outdo each other. Do you know what, mate? I've been dying to speak to you for such a long time. And it did not disappoint. Really, really been such a pleasure to talk to you. I can't wait until we meet in person. I don't know when that's going to be. Because some people get, you know, a lifelong pass to DEF CON for acing Chris's social engineering CTF. And then end up teaching at it. And some of us are stuck in the UK and never get to do that.
One day.
Well, maybe. But I'll certainly hope to see you in the States sometime because this will be... Yes. I can't imagine how bad it would be over wine, actually.
Oh, no.
but you've got to admit, this is a fun interview.
It was awesome. I'm so glad we got to talk.
So, do you know, I was beating myself up all day thinking, I can't just do a normal interview. Because I will hate myself forever if I don't ask her things like, do you ever eat anything on a social engineering assignment? And now I wish I'd never asked because I sound like I sound like an actual thief because I did. Well, it's just there was birthday cake and I was hungry.
I don't blame you. No, if there was cake, I would have had a slice. I will be honest.
There was no one else in the office.
No, I don't blame you. It looked nice. Have too.
And you know what? I gave an interview. I'm sure I've told that story somewhere else. Maybe on an interview. Maybe I raced it down. And I'm sure I lied and said that I admitted it and bought them another cake or something, but I know I didn't. I didn't. It just looked like delicious cake. Listen, mate, thanks so much for being on the show. I'll let you know when this is going out and do please stay in touch. Can't wait. I mean, I would talk to you again in a heartbeat, you know?
Awesome. So thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being on the show. Everybody, that was Snow.
Hope you enjoyed this conversation here on ITSP Magazine. As you can tell, we're on a mission to make the world of cybersecurity exciting and understandable for both individuals and businesses alike. If you'd like to support our mission, we invite you to consider a podcast sponsorship for one or more of our columns or talk shows. We thank you for joining us and appreciate your support.
You've been listening to the Jenny Ratcliffe Talk Show for ITSP Magazine. Hope you enjoyed our conversation at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. I've been Jenny Ratcliffe, the People Hacker. See you next time.